Get out of my pub.
Get out of my pub right now!
I'm not going anywhere.
Hi, welcome to Get Out of My Pod. I'm Una.
I'm Nav.
And it's a very special day, isn't it, Nav?
It's recording the podcast day.
It's recording a podcast on your birthday day.
It is my birthday, and it's obviously a very weird birthday, but it was made very special by a card I received from my co-host, Una, with the beautiful Sharon Mitchell on the front of it. You know what, I think I'm gonna, are you all right if I tweet a picture of my card?
I think you should. It's an incredible card.
I'm gonna
tweet. Everyone should get to see it.
It's beautiful. And the thing is, everybody will get to see it from the Twitter page, but just to describe it, it's not a photo of Sharon Mitchell. It is an artistic like painting of Sharon Mitchell. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is incredible. I have had it for about 8 months and have literally just been saving it in a cupboard for your birthday, so I'm so happy this day's finally arrived.
Well, hey, I was really cheap and did a mock-up picture of Una holding a Danny Dyer card for her birthday, so
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Also, like, I don't want to set a standard. I'm normally so shit at birthdays, and I'm just so pleased with myself that I sent 2 birthday cards for my friends' birthdays this week, and I'm feeling really smug about it, but like, please don't expect that from me.
It is a treat though. I mean, good. I'm glad the standard hasn't been set because I'm obviously going to fail. it is really nice getting a card in the post.
Oh yeah, especially under lockdown.
Do you know what I mean? You're like, oh, I've got mail and it's for me and it's not from, you know, the pensions company. So That's lovely. By the way, so before we get into like chatting about all our usual features and stuff, we were just chatting before the podcast about how we're both kind of loving the length of EastEnders in terms of like being able to like binge it in one sitting, like in a kind of perfect amount of time, right?
Yeah, it's great. I think like when they said they were going to have shorter episodes, I was a bit apprehensive about it at first. But no, I'm into it, you know. It feels like they've really kind of like renovated it for 2020.
Right. It's like watching an EastEnders film every week, but a film that's not too long.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. Yeah, I watched all 4 episodes in a row last night. Really enjoyed it.
Do you think they will make it permanent?
I think so. I feel like it's just the way that TV's going now. Just like, that's what we're used to, is kind of like watching everything in a row like that, and in like a very digestible like format and amount of time. So I kind of hope they keep it.
I hope so. What I hope they don't do though is pay the actors less, but then I suspect what they're going to do though, because they'll probably have to, is just make the cast smaller, so they probably won't need to pay the actors less and they probably won't be doing less work. But
God, I'm kind of like, I'm almost reluctant to get too curious about the paying conditions of people who work EastEnders.
Oh, I imagine it's not remotely equitable. Like, Steve McFadden probably takes like 90% of the wage packet and the rest are like fighting over that 10%.
Oh God, I don't know. I don't want to have to cancel my favourite thing.
Actually, you know, by the way, actually talking of Steve McFadden, so the BBC Two are doing this series looking back at the noughties. I don't know if you've seen any of it.
No, I haven't.
So I would recommend the one that they just did from last week. And what they do, they get, I think it's Angela Scanlon or Scannon, or anyway, this Irish woman who's very good at presenting. She kind of takes 2 celebrities who were famous during that year, like through that year. And the one that they got for the last episode was Nigel Harman, a.k.a. Dennis.
Oh, no way.
Original Dennis, yeah. And the reason it's reminded me is just like they showed a picture of his first scene where he absolutely like lamps Phil in the face.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. It's a bit of a golden age, really, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. I would recommend this series. And also for EastEnders fans, that episode is just absolutely like, oh, my God. It's like a little kind of, yeah, like a, what do you call those things that you bury? Like time capsule. Time capsule, yeah. Like, it's,
do you still watch all those classic EastEnders episodes on that channel?
I don't follow it. I do catch it when I'm flicking around or if I remember. And it's, Una, you need to watch it. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, maybe I need to get TV, like, just to have this.
They're on. I mean, the thing is, it's they. You can watch them on catch up. So if you go to UK TV Play, it is a weird thing to kind of watch and catch up. But I might start watching it on catch up as well now.
Yeah, I might start getting into that. Yeah, maybe. Give me something to do over the winter.
Spin-off podcast, maybe. You know, given that we're so organized in putting this one together, let's add another one.
Yeah, let's give ourselves another podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. We'll leave that to someone else. But
talking about how organized and great we are at podcasting, mm-hmm. we've got some Twitter shout outs to do from a few weeks ago.
Yeah, this is true. Actually, so one in particular that I feel quite bad about is a shout out for Kylie. Who we did actually give a shout out to last week, but it was on the record that we had to put in the bin because all the technology failed, and then we forgot to do it the second time. But yeah, shout out to Kylie, who in particular was appreciative of your analysis, Una, around Bobby and how he's kind of, yeah, he's the only person who's taking the virus seriously while everybody around him, like,
Exactly.
And we saw a bit more of that.
People are frustrated with that. Yeah, we did see a bit more of that, didn't we?
Which was annoying, but anyway, we'll get into it when we speak about the episodes. Yeah. But
thanks, Kylie. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah.
Love to have a fan.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Specifically of me.
Yeah, exactly. Do we have any other? I think we've got a couple more shout-outs to do, right?
Well, so you did a wonderful tweet on Halloween. With some like beautiful graphics, asking our listeners to enter a little quiz and see if they could name every single Halloween EastEnders ghost and how they died in the show.
Right, right.
Which was a great little bit of social media, but then we both just forgot about it forever.
We did. So. We did. who, there was one person who got them all right, right?
Shout out to Amina. Absolutely nailed it. So impressive.
Well done. I mean, I did kind of realize after, you know, they'd posted and somebody else asked, like, how do we enter, that I'd maybe not made the format clear, because as soon as somebody tweeted the answers and the responses, it slightly ruined it. But but well done to Amina for being first. That's a that's an achievement in and of itself.
Yeah, we're learning about social media promotion, all of that stuff, but better late than never, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We, you know, you're not going to get quantity from us in terms of like regularity of content and podcasts, but you're going to get gold when you get it.
Exactly.
Absolutely gold. But there we go.
So, Nav, do you remember your prediction from last week?
I do, because thankfully you reminded me before the podcast. and actually, finally, I think I've got one that I can say 90% came true. So I was kind of like, and I think it was kind of signposted that like Kat working for Phil as a cleaner was really with a kind of view to moving the heist forward. And we got that. But my specific prediction was that she would overhear something within the Mitchell house. Now, I did go on to say it would be about Callum, but you know, that's details. But she did overhear Phil talking to Richie, which was a slightly weird thing to overhear, because they kind of made out that it was like a really instrumental thing that she heard. But yeah. Really, all she found out was that Phil had a West Ham shirt and she nicked it.
Yeah, she probably could have, I don't know, she could have chosen anything to nick, really, anyway. But she did overhear something important in the Mitchell household. So I will say your prediction has come true.
I'm taking it. Just before we come on to yours, did you not think, though, when she overheard that, she was going to blackmail Phil by threatening to tell Sharon about him hiding his assets? But I guess Sharon would know that anyway.
Yeah, I didn't really think it all through, to be honest. I was just a bit like, what was going on? Because I was expecting the kind of extent of your prediction. I thought Kat was going to get a little bit more like kind of tangled up in the Callum Phil drama, which maybe still will happen. But
yeah, I mean, we'll discuss it in the episode. I'm kind of glad they've kept it like a kind of fun pound shop like Ocean's 11 thing. Like they've like kind of not made it too serious and stuff. So anyway, we'll get into that.
Enjoy this week. Yeah,
we'll get into that. But yeah, what was your prediction? Was it as good as mine, Una?
Well, I would say it's a good prediction, and it's a real shame that the EastEnders writers haven't taken up this suggestion yet. My prediction, I think, yet again, was that the Max and Linda affair is going to happen. and it's just, I don't think Max was even in it this week. totally failed.
The thing is, I don't want to defend you unnecessarily, but I still think it's on the cards, because I think what they're doing with Mick is taking him, you know, on this kind of up and down journey. And yeah. In the last week, we saw an up and a down. And I think it's now going to go towards the latter again. And that then creates the space for Linda to kind of move towards Max.
I think all I'll say is that if this doesn't happen, if we don't get to see Max and Linda, I'm going to be livid.
Will you stop watching EastEnders?
I will never stop watching EastEnders. Like, I honestly don't know what they would have to do for me to stop watching EastEnders.
Yeah, I feel like our threats are pretty shit. We'll carry on doing the podcast and we'll carry on watching the episodes and we'll carry on telling other people to watch EastEnders.
Put any old shit on the screen, I'll watch it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, we're not really voting with our kind of, you know, feet, but there we go. What are you going to do?
But, yeah, I don't know. They've given me, like, a little taste of it now, and I just think it's going to be so good. But yeah, not this week. I've really not been on it with my predictions for quite a while.
I think you've got a kind of like a more kind of lofty sense of like the storylines. You kind of have a, you know, you're thinking of like the kind of, you know, big trajectories of storylines, while I'm basically looking at like the tiny shit that happens from like week to week.
You're so kind to me now.
No, but I do think Max and Linda's going to happen. I agree with you on that. Like, I'm not.
Just
I'm not
longer
being
term.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe starting to. I guess we're still guessing, like, what's going to be the big Christmas storyline, and I wonder if they are just like really building this up and building it up, because like Mick's kind of Mick's spiraling has been really dragged out at this point. I don't think in a bad way, but just longer than I thought it was going to be.
Well, longer in the context of how quick other storylines are. And actually, should we just get into it about Mick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Story. So, yeah, we obviously last, at the end of last week, as in the week before last, we saw Katie's arrival, and then she spent a week gaslighting Mick.
She's really evil, isn't she? She's quite a good villain.
Yeah, and actually, gaslighting has become like a really popular term recently, and I don't think people always kind of understand what it means, or maybe use it in exactly the right circumstances. But like, as a kind of portrayal of gaslighting, this was incredible, because even as a viewer, you're sitting there going like, maybe he did get it wrong.
Yeah, there were like tiny moments where I was like, oh, I don't know if this is like absolutely awful or kind of normal.
As in her behavior.
Yeah, well, should we listen to a clip of it? I've picked out a clip that I think is a really good example of some really very skillful gaslighting.
Right, I'm ready.
Okay, let's go. I think it's Tom.
I haven't really been coping recently. Been having panic attacks. And I've been on these pills, you know, and they were helping and that for a bit, but now I just don't see the point, really. What's the point in anything, really?
Look at me. Those boys that used to give you a hard time at home, do you know where they are now? They're either inside or they're on the street. But not you. You raised a family, you run a business, and you're not giving up now. Because you're different. You're special. I believe in you, Michael.
Katie, wait.
Ooh, bloody hell.
So evil.
Obviously, the most kind of skillful gaslighters sometimes believe their own bullshit. And I feel like we're seeing that in this storyline, that to some extent, Katie seems so convincing that maybe she's convinced herself to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think what's interesting as well is she's also kind of like repeating some tropes that we hear quite a lot that you wouldn't necessarily like recognize as damaging. So she is doing this thing of like, oh, you're different to all these other kids in care, and you've pulled yourself up by your bootstraps and you're special. And like, I think what's interesting about that scene in particular is like the kind of speech she gave there is the kind of speech we might hear in like other storylines, not as like a toxic gaslighting storyline, but actually as like a little inspirational speech for someone. And I think it's like quite interesting that they've really like delved into how she kind of would play children off against each other and do that like divide and rule thing to control people, but like using these toxic narratives we have around like pulling yourself out of poverty and kind of not being like all the others.
And in the word she kind of used there and the kind of tone in which she delivered it, you could hear even now like the control and the power and the hold that she has over Mick, and it's almost like she's picking up maybe where she left off. Like she knows how to like make him feel both vulnerable and special, and for her to kind of be able to like manipulate that.
Yeah, she's doing that thing of like she's coming, she's put him in a vulnerable place, she's kind of, she's like breaking him down to then like put him back together and pick him back up. And it's like, yeah, it's very subtle and horrible to watch.
I think what's going to be fascinating with Katie is that she's been, what we've seen of her so far, if we didn't know the history of it, she would be quite a likable character. Like, I don't, you know, like you kind of said there with that speech, like if delivered by like another character, you'd be like, oh, you know, she's got this person's best interest at heart. Because we've got the backstory, we know that that's not true. What will be interesting to me is how they portray that on the screen. Like, are they going to like, you know, have it so that she suddenly becomes this monster and she's been hiding it all along? Or is it going to be the case that she continues to like be this person, maybe even believe some of her own like bullshit, and we never get that satisfying sense of like she admits to everything? And I actually think maybe that's the right way for the storyline to go, because, you know, people who do engage in that behavior often do it till even after nobody still believes them, they still convince themselves of the narrative that they've created.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, I mean, I think that'd be an interesting way for the storyline to go. I think that we got a hint that she does know what she's done when there was discussion about kind of how she left the children's home. And she gave this story about the boss of the children's home, like groping her, assaulting her, basically, and her just leaving. I got the impression that like the backstory there might actually be that she was kind of clocked in what she was doing with the kids and made to leave like very quickly. It was also obviously at the same time she became pregnant, so maybe it's just that she became pregnant and so like immediately had to leave.
Yeah, this is true. And it'll be interesting as to like who uncovers that. Like, is it going to be like Mick becoming a detective? He's now back in the place where he's thinking like, well, I am right, actually, I do remember this correctly, and maybe he's going to go down that route. But it'd be interesting to see if it's somebody else, and I suspect Shirley might now be the person who starts to look into this a bit more and figure it all out.
Yeah, I would like it to be Shirley, Detective Shirley. Do you think she's going to figure it out and figure out that Gray murdered Chantal?
Oh my God. The only thing is that, yes, I don't think she can do it alone, though. And so if they could bring Detective Habiba back to be her, you know, sidekick, that I think would be like more believable if they both like solved crimes together.
That is a double act that I would love to see.
Shirley and Habiba solving crimes on the square.
So should we talk about Shirley then? Like, we got a little bit more of her and Gray.
I do want to talk about Shirley. I just want to say one quick last thing about the Mick storyline. Really, really lovely to see Frankie back on screen, and I hope she's coming back now.
Yeah, I do hope they keep her around, and I felt like they did quite well in like building a little bond between her and Mick. And I quite liked the scene, you know, of her reacting to everything. She started off in this place of like, obviously you would not make that up, and then kind of got like brought around by her mum's manipulative ways. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how much she really trusts her mum on that.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder if Frankie comes back now thinking that Mick isn't a dad, and maybe she does come on to Tina, and maybe that's how it all becomes like, because then maybe Katie comes back and goes like, you can't date Katie, and she's like, why? We're not related. Like,
oh my God, I didn't even think of that. That's so good.
Right. And we obviously know that the person who plays Tina is leaving, so I hope she gets a good storyline, and this would, in my mind, be a good, if a slightly weird storyline to leave on.
Yeah, I thought it was nice to see more of Tina this week.
Yeah, yeah. And The scene with the pub, I think it suited her character really well, her getting Mick the shift at the pub. And we got like this brief like 5 minutes of maybe things are going back to normal, like Shirley will get back in Mick's good book.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought Tina was a really kind of good character this week. Yeah.
I've got a question about that stuff in the pub, actually.
Oh yeah.
Mick and Ian used to be really good mates.
Yeah, but who, like, the thing is, I was thinking the same thing, but like Ian, like, what is friendship to Ian? Like Ian and Shane Ritchie, like Alfie, were like good mates, but I'm sure he fucked him over a million times. Like,
yeah,
you know, who the only person who his friendship he hasn't deliberately tried to fuck over is Sharon, apart from when he feels a bit kind of spited and stuff, but they generally reconcile. But we know that friendship's going to disintegrate anyway because he killed her son.
All right, yeah, fair enough. He's just a scumbag, isn't he? Yeah, like, I just was a little bit like, oh, you could at least pretend to care.
Yeah, I know. And also for Mick to take it, like, to be like, yeah. if a friend of mine did that to me, I'd be like, what the fuck? We're supposed to be friends. Like,
yeah.
Piece of shit. Absolute scumbag.
Awful. Yeah. Absolutely awful.
Anyway. Right, shall we move on now to Shirley properly then?
Yeah, so Shirley, we saw quite a bit of Shirley and Grey this week.
Yeah, this little double act that feels like it's becoming like normal, and it's like I don't think this was supposed to be as normal as it's become.
I don't know how I feel about it, you know.
Well, I mean, in some respects, I'm kind of glad for the Chantel story to have a bit of a break, like, and it not to be this long in like one intense block. So I don't mind that not being the focus. A little bit put off by like this kind of domestic situation that Shirley and Grey have kind of put together. But and I'm increasingly just confused as to what Shirley, like, what, you know, what Shirley's role will be in his comeuppance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very confused about the whole thing. I'm also confused about what is Shirley's job. Like, what does she actually do for Phil? Or how much admin does he need?
Yeah, I mean, Phil's finances and people who do work for him, and it's like, I don't even get it. Like, and also, if Shirley's got, I'm not saying she's not skilled and stuff, but like, it's like she went from not really utilizing all of these skills to suddenly being exactly the right person for this job, which...
Yeah, and she always seems to be like sitting and doing paperwork. Right. It's like, since when was that Shirley skill set?
Yeah, like, you know. I mean, good for her if she's good at it, but like...
Yeah, fine. Yeah.
It is weird. The thing is, though, with that kind of stuff, because we do a podcast, like, we think about this stuff, like, quite specifically, yeah. But, like, actually watching the episodes, like, a lot of this kind of stuff, I don't mind it, really. Like, these, like, little things that don't necessarily make sense. So, Shirley being, like, you know, basically, yeah, like... feels like office manager and fixer. I'm a bit like, well, a bit weird, but you know, fine, she's good at it.
Yeah, fine if it works. I just found myself being like, what is all this paperwork that you've got to do? I mean, I guess I'm just a little bit nervous, have been from the start, about what they do with Grey's character and like how long they string it out for, and kind of that sort of like lack of parity and like this exploration of Grey's character and his humanity while Chantel has just been killed off and becomes this kind of like victim symbol, which I always think is a bit of a shame in these kind of storylines. But I am quite enjoying the sort of like turn towards Shirley as an unexpected thing. One thing I got a bit worried about this week was him and Whitney. I felt like there was this just slight hint of like they are going to do the Grey and Whitney storyline, and I really very strongly don't want that to happen.
Yeah, it's weird. I definitely picked up the same thing. It was that scene when Whitney dropped the kids back off, and I definitely got the same vibe. I don't want it to happen, but I guess the thing for me is right now it's not clear to me who is going to expose Grey, because we've got we had a brief kind of period of where it looked like kind of Grey and Mitch, not Grey, sorry, Kira and Mitch would be his comeuppance. That has faded away. I thought Shirley, that has disappeared. Now I'm thinking, okay, I don't want Gray and Whitney to happen, but like, can somebody like be suspicious of Gray right now? Because literally nobody is suspicious of him.
I mean, maybe they could do a thing with Gray and Whitney where like Whitney has finally, after all of this horrible experience, like become so attuned to the signs of people who are abusive that she would pick it up straight away. But I just like, I would love Whitney to have a storyline that isn't attached to some horrible man. That would be great.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm not a fan of what they're doing with her right now as well. Like, she, her character seems to be this kind of, you know, relationship obsessed, like bad decision making person. I'm not blaming her for the situation she's in, but like, they do keep her having her like be with like bad, in bad relationships. Or she's this kind of like, I don't say like angelic figure, but like this kind of, you know, like, yeah, this kind and caring and generous person. And obviously I'm a big fan of those qualities in people, but like, I feel like they could, you know, there was times at which like she wanted to explore her career in like fashion. Where the fuck has that gone? Like, there was times at which she was like fun and like dancing and having a laugh, and like, you know, she had some of the traits of like cats, like kind of cheekiness and stuff like that. She's lost all of that edge. She's lost all of that ambition. I get she's coming out of a difficult situation, but like, please, I can't. I want to see these sides that I know exist in Whitney.
Yeah, I just think like, let's not do the Whitney storyline again. Like, just give her something else. Let her move on.
Yeah, completely. Like, you know, give Whitney a chance. I'm starting a hashtag.
So, I mean, but there has been a lot of space for Whitney's little sister to get a load of screen time.
Oh my God. Tiffany is going to be carrying Stuart and Rainey's baby.
What did you think of this storyline?
I really like it. I really like it. I am a little surprised at how much of a kind of Neanderthal Keegan is. You know, men are like that. So not
men are terrible. So.
Men are terrible. So not, you know, a pretty accurate portrayal, I guess, because he's young. A part of me feels like he maybe should be a little bit better at this, but maybe I'm being a bit naive there.
I don't know. I think it's one of those things, you know, in a similar way to kind of sex work or something. It's one of those things that lots of people, particularly men, kind of have this attitude of like, that's, I don't know, it's like off limits to paid work or something, or it's like inherently traumatic to do something like that. So I thought it kind of made sense, I thought, his reaction. And I absolutely love pairing up Stuart and Rainey, particularly with Tiff, but also with Keegan. I thought there was like some quite funny moments between all four of them this week.
Right.
So I'm really excited about this storyline.
And there's a kind of, as viewers, I think the fandom has a lot of affection for like Stuart and Rainey. But you don't always see that on the square. They're generally like shunned or like seen as weirdos and what have you. And it was actually kind of nice this week, particularly via Tiffany and to some extent Keegan, to see like them reacting in the way that we do. Is that like they're kind of like adorably odd and like really sweet together. And Tiffany obviously sees that and absolutely loves it.
Yeah. Should we listen to a little clip actually of starting off with Keegan and Stuart?
Yes, please.
Look, Stuart, it might just work out cheaper to just say what you came here to say.
Right, I don't want there to be any bad blood between us, all right? Me and Rainey, we get an idea in our heads, we're like kids in a sweet shop. We didn't think it through.
Yeah. You've had enough to deal with the past couple of months with your sister and everything. Yeah, well, like if anyone could understand someone wanting a baby. Maybe Chantal.
Yeah.
Look, I've got to tell you though, bruv, like, the thought of your ute shacking up inside my wife for 9 months. Like, Stuart, it's weird, man. What else can I say about it?
Are you two finished? Shacking up inside my wife? On my keg, a flaming travel lodge.
Look, I'm just saying, Tiff, it makes me feel weird.
Yeah, I gathered that. I made it pretty clear when you stormed.
Oh my God, Keegan channeling is like Borat impression. Like, that's going on about my wife. And it's like, I was. It's not a trait that I'd necessarily seen in Keegan to this extent previously. I don't think he's being a terrible person. I think it comes from, you know, both a kind of good place in his mind and him a person just affected by the patriarchy. So, like, I don't make him personally responsible for that. But, like, that scene of him going about just, you know, literally saying that phrase, like, my wife,
he said, my wife's womb, my wife's body is not for rent.
Yeah, it's like, mate, fuck off.
Yeah, gross.
I think if there was, like, you know, his concerns came from, like, a kind of medical perspective or a perspective with regards to, like, the kind of emotional aspects of carrying a baby, delivering it, and then handing it over to someone else, totally understand that, totally buy into that. Like, these things can kind of have, you know, can be confused. Yeah. I mean, as a person who's never going to carry a child, I'm just assuming that would be the case. And that, I think, will be an interesting thing to explore. And I don't mind them doing this with Keegan. It just feels a little bit like, okay, fair enough. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's pretty shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was kind of a shame. I mean, I thought it worked really well for the storyline, but when he had that conversation with Mitch, that he didn't actually tell him the details, because I feel like Mitch's advice might have been quite different.
Yeah, and like Mitch's advice started off as thinking, like, this is not going to be good. I think it ended up in a place that I was fine with, but when he started off going like, oh, my granddad used to say, like, happy wife, happy life. And initially I was basically saying, like, you're just saying, like, don't have any agency opinion and just kind of, like, play
you secretly
the...
resent your wife.
Right,
forever,
do you know what I mean? Right. But then he eventually said, like, his granddad liked to make his wife happy and that made him happy. Even then, I don't think that's a perfect mantra for life, but it feels a lot better than basically, like, you know, playing the downtrodden, like, husband.
It's a reflection of life, isn't it? Like, this is the, you know, patriarchy, sexism, it's all around us, and it's often around us in kind of good intentions and in people that we love. And it's just like, I like that about EastEnders, the way this stuff is sort of always present and not always kind of directly as, like, an issue storyline.
Definitely. I guess the one thing I'd ask, though, and I'm not saying I've got a firm view on this, but you and I are having this conversation and you and I have got these opinions on these situations that we would share, like, or we would have if it was happening to somebody in real life, right? Like, we would probably have, like, the same thoughts and stuff. So sometimes when we have these discussions, I kind of feel like, well, where is that person on the square? Like, and I don't think our views always need to be represented on the square, because, you know, not everybody's going to be as interested in all the things that we are. But, like, sometimes going to be like, where, surely somebody in 2020 might have some of the same views as us.
Yeah, we might have, like, something to say about politics every now and then.
Right, do you know what I mean?
I mean, we've got to remember it is the BBC.
Yeah.
The BBC's version of objectivity is just reinforcing the status quo. So,
yeah, and actually...
It's a shame.
It is a shame. And actually, on that note, and I don't want to go too far down this hole, but I think also portrayals of working class lives sometimes kind of... they go into a place where they're going like, well, nobody, like, has a kind of, you know, intellectual engagement in any of these issues. Nobody's, like, studied any of these things. Like, nobody has an interest beyond, like, just the kind of, you know, what you learn through, like, normal human interaction. It's like, yeah, that's quite kind of, like, insulting. That, like,
it's very BBC, isn't it? I mean, BBC's idea of working class is, like, someone who's got a regional accent
and never read a book.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So,
but, you know, we're going to have to live with it if we want to watch stuff on the BBC.
Right. Or they're treated like there's these, like, weird aberrations. So, like, I remember when Libby was on the square and she was like this really smart freak who really just wanted to be loved.
And she, like, just needed to leave and go to Oxford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never mind.
All right, then. Let's move on.
Well, the other big storyline that we kind of got this week was the aftermath of Jay finding out about Lola and Stephen.
Oh, yeah.
Or Peter.
Lola and Peter.
Peter, yeah, sorry.
God, Stephen's dead now, isn't he?
Sorry, yeah. That would be a plot twist.
What happened to Stephen? Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was all quite sweet, you know?
Yeah, and actually kind of, I think we kind of saw it coming, but Jay having that realization that, you know what, I'm not as bothered as somebody who is madly in love would be, and maybe that should tell me something.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen Lola like having her doubts over like the last couple of months or so. So I think they led up to it quite nicely. It made sense. I'm kind of glad that like Jay isn't going to be having a full on like cheating affair with Honey.
Okay, here's an interesting question. Obviously, Lola slept with Peter before the hiatus, like I think even possibly before the pandemic started. So it's a storyline that kind of dates back quite a long time.
Yeah.
When they did that, do you think they had the Jay and Honey storyline in view, or do you think that was a kind of, you know, retrospective change like after the hiatus?
I really don't know, you know. I think... because that was when Honey was away anyway, right? Like, she had broken up with Adam and taken some time out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I'm wondering if actually the original storyline was that Lola would get together with Peter.
Maybe. I kind of think they might have had Jay and Honey in mind for a little while, because there was a window of time when I was expecting Billy and Honey to get back together and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. And actually... maybe they felt like that was too obvious, so this was quite a nice and actually really well done, like, changing those characters' directions.
Yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised. This is totally one of those ones where if you'd said to me, like, back in March that Jay and Honey were going to get together, I would have been like, that is stupid and I'm annoyed about it, but they brought me around, totally.
And actually, even if they did have it in view, they've really made the most of, like, lockdown. So, like, referencing it as being, like, the period in which, like, Jay and Honey got closer, Jay not seeing Lola for that entire period.
Yeah.
I think they've used it as a plot device really well.
Yeah, I think they have done it very, very well. So we only saw Honey, like, briefly this week. Like, she had a conversation with Lola and she had a conversation with Jay. But there was that moment where Jay, like, looked straight at her for just a little bit too long. And it was like, yes, this is on.
Yeah, little, some flutter, some butterflies, like little hearts were coming out the screen when that happened. I think they'll be such a lovely couple. By the way, actually, before that, obviously, we got the scene of Jay trying to confront Peter, and I'm really glad, because sometimes they don't do this, and so it's Peter was like, I'm double the size of you, like, why? Yeah. What are you doing? You're insane.
I thought that was really funny, actually.
Yeah,
but, like, yeah. Peter was just fully not up for having that fight.
I thought Peter, I know we've had kind of mixed feelings about him, but I think, like, for who the character is now, I think he really kind of came into his own this week of being this slightly cowardly yet still smug prick.
Yeah, in many ways he's actually a more believable son of Ian Beale than previous to yeah, us.
definitely.
Yeah, he's growing on me. He's kind of growing on me. I'm still just not sure. I don't think the writers even know what they're doing with him, to be honest.
Well, it's basically, the way to think about it now is that it's Ian if he had muscles.
All right, that's fine. I'm up for that. If yeah. They go like further down that route, that makes sense to me.
There you go. Ian with muscles.
So, talking of Ian, Ian was a scumbag again this week. But Sharon is still kind of taking pity on him.
Well, yeah, there was a moment in which she almost kicked him out for leaving skid marks in the toilet.
Oh my god, I just didn't want to think about that.
It's kind of weird with soaps, right? Like, they don't cover that aspect of life in any detail, which I'm not complaining about. But, you know, quite a little nice little weird thing there. I am surprised, although it would have been a bit of a cliche, that they didn't give her, like, pink marigolds with, like, fluffy, like, rims. like, but, you know, they had Sharon cleaning the bog. But yeah.
That was quite funny. And it kind of makes sense that she's taken him in, like, fair enough, it had to happen.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at how easily she came to terms with the idea that, like, the pub was bought for her by Ian, who just couldn't afford it. And I get, like, ultimately she's, like, maybe, you know, flattered or touched by it, but then if I'd been in that situation, I'd be a bit like, I didn't ask you or want you to do that, so you've put a lot of pressure, like, on me by, like, almost making yourself bankrupt and robbing your mum because you wanted to help me out. And fucking Max over.
Yeah, and also, like, it's not that long ago since he was just being a creep, and it became, like, very apparent that he'd bought the Vic in this, like, weird idea that, like, him and Sharon were going to get together. So, yeah. But, I mean, Sharon's never been great at distinguishing between, like, trash and romance.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I mean, Dennis obviously being the obvious example of, like, romance over trash.
Yeah, I guess I'm mainly referencing Phil, like the things that Phil does that she kind of would find like romantic or appealing. It's just always a bit like, come on, Sharon, you can do better than this.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I wonder if they're going to put Sharon into some kind of relationship. Like, and I would love to see her with someone who isn't Phil or Ian or anybody on the square currently.
I was just about to ask, do you reckon that she could ever get back with Jack?
I actually, we can come on to that in a moment. I'm now more bought into the idea of Jack and Denise than I've ever been. So actually, I kind of hope not. So I'd love to see like a new character. Like when they brought, I think we talked a while ago about that fireman that Sharon dated in like the early noughties. And it was an entirely new character. It was somebody who supposedly had a history with existing characters, but we'd never seen them before. And it just became this kind of like, yeah, like Shakespearean, but still this kind of big romance that ultimately had a tragic ending. And I'd love to see her have, I guess in some respects, kind of what she had with Keanu, but yeah, I'd love to see her be with a new person. Yeah,
I totally agree. And I think that like there's still so much more in Sharon. Like while I'm a little bit bored of kind of Phil as a character and like seeing so much of him, I still think that like Sharon's got a lot more to give. So it'd be nice to just bring in someone like totally new and kind of like explore some different parts of Sharon.
Yeah, 100%. I think it would be a really smart move for the character, because at the moment she's being treated in a respectful way, but like as a kind of, you know, national treasure of the square and kind of iconic character and legendary character. And that's great. But like ultimately, that doesn't really take you anywhere. And you end up just becoming somebody who just like pops up in the background of scenes to be hilarious. So we obviously know she'll get the big storyline with finding out about Dennis, but in terms of a happier storyline, it'll be nice to see her, you know, put those acting chops into something more kind of joyful and exciting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So talking of another good comedy character.
Oh yeah.
I quite enjoyed the Cat and Phil show this week.
Oh my god, they played that so well. And like Phil
really
in that
did.
Tabard, like so much of it didn't make sense as to like the extent to which like Kat had this kind of control over Phil and Phil going along with it compliantly. Like if you thought about it too much, you'd be a bit like, why is he like cleaning the building? He doesn't need to do this. But I don't care. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it was really funny. Should we listen to a little bit?
Oh my god,
of
yes,
Kat
please.
And Phil as cleaners.
Yes, please.
Not on your own today, then?
No, this is Malcolm. He's my new apprentice. He don't say much. Or anything, really. Malcolm, this is Duncan.
All elbow bumps these days. Where's his cleaning pass?
I told you to bring it, didn't I? Don't worry about him. He's not the brightest. He's basically a five-year-old trapped in an old man's body, yeah. Just doing my bit for society.
Poor little fella. Little something for you.
Oh, you shouldn't have.
Noticed yours were looking a bit worn out, so I asked Mother what she uses. They're cotton lined.
I love them. How is your mum?
Her shingles are back, so that's another thing on the list.
Well, let's stick the kettle on. You can tell me all about it, yeah? You can start by mopping the gents. You?
Ridiculous but enjoyable.
Oh my days. Kat, since she's been back, I think, I don't know if like her break, I don't know what she did during her break, but she has come back so on form, and I'm here for it.
I think she's so funny. Yeah, I absolutely just like loved her this week. And we didn't see that much of Stacey, but I love those little like double act moments where it's both of them.
Yeah, massively. Like they've the Slaters are back on top right now. I think they're probably my favorite kind of family unit on the square. And yeah, what do you think is going to happen next with the heist?
I think, I mean, I've got a prediction. This is going to be my prediction this week. So, should I just do my prediction now or do you
No,
want to hear it later?
save it, save it, save it.
All
Yeah.
right. I think it's going to be big.
Going to
Got
be
some thoughts on it.
okay. Is your does your prediction involve Kush, or can we discuss Kush?
We can discuss Kush.
Or should we just okay? So it looks like Kush probably will end up being involved. I know the last we saw is that he's not going to be involved, but I think he'll either involve himself without being invited, or they'll have no choice, and he's gonna fuck it up. And it's gonna either be to do with like him taking a risk, which obviously kind of like speaks to his gambling, or he's literally going to be like playing poker and like miss his cue to like drive away.
Yeah, there'll be like something. I mean, yeah, he's gonna do something stupid. He reacted really badly to the whole situation, I thought.
I think he reacted badly, but I think he reacted in the way somebody kind of gripped, like in this kind of addiction, might react, because
Yeah.
we got the sense that like, oh, you know, he's admitted he's an addict, etc. But then obviously we saw that Martin had like caught him out
Yeah.
on the website, so he's not in the right headspace.
No, we know that he's just kind of like in at rock bottom, like in a really bad place, just really erratic, making terrible decisions. But it was quite interesting to, I thought the conversation between him and Kat, where he kind of stormed off and said maybe they should break up, like that was quite well done. And I had a lot of sympathy for Kat in that moment where she was just like, no, I don't trust you. You've made a lot of bad decisions recently. No, I don't
Yeah.
want to bring you in on this situation. I was like, well, fair enough. I mean, you're only really having to do this robbery because Kush gambled away all of your money.
Yeah, exactly right. Like a part of me feels like maybe they should break up, and the only reason they're not is because of the kind of vulnerability that Kush is like displaying, and Kat wouldn't break up with him in that circumstance. But right now, I don't see what I don't see their relationship like being, you know, a particularly kind of meaningful right now, one right now. So maybe they should break up.
I mean, I think they should, but then where would Kush go on the square?
You know, shack up with Martin and Ruby.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I think that like they've been quite clever in kind of referencing back to Alfie, because obviously like Kush and Alfie are such different characters, but you can see a pattern here in like the treatment and Kat's experience with the men she's been with. So there's a bit of me that's like, yeah, Kat should just dump him, but.
I hope we don't end up like, you know, by the time like Kush leaves the square, I hope we don't hate him.
Oh no, surely we could never hate Kush.
No, but like, and I think, you know, right now, because we know he's an addict, like even the stupid things he does, like it's always like
Yeah.
within the context of him, like you know, having this addiction. That doesn't mean that I don't agree with Kat, because it's fine to acknowledge that someone is in the grip of addiction. It doesn't make it any easier to like be around them.
No.
I don't know. I wonder if there'll come a point where like he'll just kind of relentlessly like refuse help, refuse to kind of like do the right things. And I don't think you should abandon anybody, even if they do that, but like maybe we'll lose sympathy.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I just, wherever this storyline is going, I think it's going to be pretty sad.
Yeah, well, you know, we were about to have him screw up a heist for Phil, so maybe the first thing he'll need to deal with is Phil's wrath.
Everyone on the square has got to go through that at some point, though, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I do want to see Phil in that tabard again, though.
It was
Make
a
it happen.
great look for him. Yeah. Something that Phil was not paying attention to this week was his little boy on the square.
Oh my days. Like I kind of thought Raymond was cute from the beginning, but like that scene of him being at church and just the joy on his face. And I was thinking like it's an actor, but it seems so bloody genuine, and I just want to give him a big hug, and he's like, yeah, he's just adorable.
Oh, outrageous. It's so cute. Oh my God. Yeah, very cute little actor. And quite good, it seems like, for 3 years old. He had a couple of lines. I think he said yes twice.
And also, he went from being, you know, sad and down to being quite happy, and you know, that's acting. You know, he did it.
Little star. So did you enjoy the church scenes?
I kind of did, yeah. Like, there was something a little bit hammy about the whole week of EastEnders, but I was like, I'm into it. And I'm also, like, I think I said it earlier, like, I am more bought into Denise and Jack's relationship than I've ever been after this week.
It was really sweet this week, wasn't it?
It was really good.
So did you, I found myself a little bit on edge thinking that, like, Lucas was just going to come out of, like, a door somewhere.
Yeah, 100%. That's where I thought that was going. I still think that is where it's going. But I was a bit like, oh, shit. I actually thought Lucas was going to be the pastor.
Yeah, me too. But I was sort of glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, like, suddenly, like, Denise sees his face, like, going like, yeah, oh, praise Jesus. And it's like, oh, my God. Yeah, but it's coming. It's definitely coming.
Yeah, I think that would have been... It would have been a bit much, like, on the first visit.
But are you on the same page as me that this is how Lucas comes back?
Yeah, very much so. Because I think, I mean, I don't know how true this is, but I've seen, like, hints online that the Lucas, like, return is coming very, very soon. So it makes sense. It'll be, like, linked to this, into the storyline. I think they're kind of, like, bringing up, you know, they're really, like, demonstrating Jack's commitment to Denise, even though they've broken up. So I think that'll be, like, a very interesting, like, dynamic of kind of, like, Jack dealing with this like awful ex.
Was Jack would have been on the square when the whole Lucas thing happened though, right?
Yeah, he would have been. I can't remember. I mean, this is one of those funny things where, like, obviously Jack and Denise technically have known each other for probably decades, but I don't remember them ever having, like, any kind of, like, relationship before they got together.
Well, you know who Jack did have a relationship with, who is also coming back?
Who?
Chelsea.
Oh my God.
I do you know, I only know this from the fandom and I don't actually remember it in any detail myself, in fact at all. But it may have been a fling, like, it may have been nothing serious, but yeah, it definitely
I do
happened.
Vaguely remember that. Wow, I'd totally forgotten. Does Denise know about that?
Yeah, but you know, the whole square, like, it's so fucking incestuous that nobody really cares anymore.
So you'd think you'd have a chat about it, wouldn't you, if you were getting together with someone, they'd, like, dated your daughter already, you'd, like, want to just clear the air on that front, I would have thought.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, like, whatever. I mean, Denise barely references Chelsea, or Libby. Libby slightly more, but Chelsea just disappeared and we never heard from her again.
Yeah, I think if you hadn't watched it back when she was on it, you wouldn't know that she exists.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, maybe Chelsea's going to be furious and come back and try and get Jack back. I
think that'd be quite funny. I feel like it will either be, like, an interesting plot driver or it'll just be one of those things that, like, they occasionally reference as a joke, but, like, no one actually cares about it.
Yeah, I hope it's the latter, because the idea that, like, 15 years later, Chelsea's furious that, as opposed to weirded out, I can understand, but, like, if she's angry that, like, Denise is with Jack. And to be honest, Jack and Denise are a much better suited couple in my mind than, you know, Jack and Chelsea. So,
I mean, what was the age difference there? Jesus.
Yeah, I know. God. I know. Kind of mad. But I mean, I don't generally care about age differences when it comes to consenting adults, but it doesn't fit right in my head.
No. And I think that, you know, that is when Jack was sort of like a bit of a, what's the word that I'm looking for? Like,
lad.
He was a bit of a love interest on the square, wasn't he? He was like this good looking, like, younger guy. And I think, like, as he's got older and had some more serious storylines, that kind of thing, like, wouldn't make sense with his character anymore. But I think back in the day when, he was just this kind of, like, quite, well, I mean, I don't think he's attractive, but, like, supposed to be very attractive, like, lad on the square.
I think he's better looking now than he was when he was younger. But maybe I've just got older.
He's not for me, just generally, young or old.
Yeah, poor Jack.
And he's a police officer, so ew.
Yeah, he only got eyes for Danny Dyer, fair enough.
I literally, like, can't see anyone else on that square.
We should do a ranking of, like, the best looking characters on the square.
Oh my God, we should. Yeah, we absolutely should.
Over the years. Yeah, we'll get a lot of pushback from the fandom, I'm sure, but, you know, do your own podcast. No, I'm kidding, we love you guys.
So I think we might have covered all the storylines this week.
I think we have. It was quite a punchy week, and hopefully it's been a punchy episode. Although I'm looking, we're actually over an hour, so maybe it's not been
not
that
punchy. Very punchy, yeah. EastEnders are trying to help us out. They've cut down the episode time. They've cut down the number of storylines they cover in a week, but still, look at us, banging on.
Complete mess. We're a mess. Is it that time?
So, Nav, on your birthday, who is your EastEnder of the week?
Oh, a couple of extra notes there. That's lovely. Special birthday.
A bit of musical creativity. Hope you enjoyed that.
Is that like when EastEnders have like a special episode? They do like Julia's theme.
It's exactly.
Is that like
a
special jingle?
Special birthday jingle.
Oh my god, I'm so excited. Does that mean I'm going to have to do it for your birthday next year as well? Damn. Oh god. Okay. All right. It's going to be. I think it's pretty obvious who it's going to be for me this week. It's Kat. It's definitely Kat.
Yes, Kat. She was nearly my EastEnder of the week, to be fair.
Okay, I'm glad we have a difference, because I was a little bit like, oh god, am I gonna be taking Una's? I've also realised I go first every time because you do the jingle first, so I'm happy to swap that round next week. But yeah, no, mine is Kat. All the reasons I've said, she's been sassy, funny, serious. All the great things a person should be in life, she has been all of those things this week.
She's so good, isn't she? Because she goes from that like really kind of like quite theatrical like comedy, right, to being like very believable as a serious character and like very easy to empathize with. I don't think that's that easy to do.
Yeah, and also there's something about her where she is right now as a character that she feels kind of very in control, which sounds like an odd thing to say given what's happening with Kush and given that she's planning on launching a robbery, but like she's not a victim of circumstance, which sometimes they make her out to be, and she's getting these obstacles put in front of her and she's navigating them.
Yeah, it is a different energy, isn't it? Because like Kat's kind of had this history of like some awful thing happens and she kind of goes off the rails for a little bit. And I mean, you may interpret like planning a robbery with Phil Mitchell as going off the rails, but it's not quite the same.
It's not. It is entirely on the rails, and I endorse that behaviour.
Go on, Kat. Yeah.
Well, who was your EastEnder of the week?
So my EastEnder of the week, despite his kind of enforcement of the patriarchy on Tiff, is Keegan.
Fair dues. Yeah, go on. Tell me more.
I just thought Keegan was quite funny this week, and I think it's been a long time of him kind of having like horrible serious storylines where he has to be like, I don't know, just be miserable and angry, and obviously it kind of ended up negative for him this week, but there was like some really nice moments where he was just like quite cheeky, quite funny, like the dynamic between him and Tiff was nice. It was nice to see him have this like heart to heart with Mitch, and I want to see more of that.
Okay, I'm with you on the moments in which that happens. I do think it's a sad situation with that character where we get a week where he's also angry and miserable. We're just grateful because he gets some happy, joyful and funny moments.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a little bit hard done by, I think, with the storylines. But...
Right. I think if he could just have a week entirely full of joy and love and happiness without him being a bit angry about something, that would be great.
Yeah, that would be lovely. But maybe that's just like not realistic for a black teenager living in 2020.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't, you know, this is no judgment on his anger. And the fact he's not angry more often is a miracle. But, you know, it's fictional. You don't have to make it too accurate. Just give us some escapism, please.
We could have a little bit of Keegan joy, couldn't we? That'd
absolutely
be nice.
I think, were we talking about the film Get Out a while ago?
I think we were, maybe not on the podcast.
Well, just because it kind of makes me think of that film where the director had initially written a kind of, you know, more realistic but more depressing ending of that film. And for anybody who hasn't seen that film, it kind of speaks to racial politics, but in a really kind of smart, clever way, set in a family, set in a relationship, set in a mixed race relationship. So it was really smart, and there was the potential at the end for it to end with like police brutality and police racism and institutional racism, and all the signs pointed to that. But the director decided, you know what, fuck this, we've got enough fucking miserable shit happening in the world, I'm gonna make it a happy ending.
Yeah, but yet it doesn't compromise on like the reality of the situation and the message that it's getting across. And I think like it would be good. I mean, with a lot of storylines, it'd be good if kind of EastEnders could get better at like having that uncompromising like frame and illumination of the issues, but not necessarily dragging us through the traumatic outcomes of those situations.
Yeah, so I know what you mean. I think ultimately, and we've kind of said it earlier, it's the BBC, and I think we're going to be waiting a long time if we want to see the kind of directorship we saw on Get Out.
Yeah, not a fair comparison, really.
No, so you know, you carry on doing you, EastEnders. We'll love you regardless.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll take whatever. Yeah.
Well done.
So, have you got a prediction this week now?
Have I got a prediction for this week? Have I got a prediction, given that it's a feature we do every single week and obviously I've prepared for it? Well, no, I don't, Una. So can you go first?
I can absolutely go first. I prepared this week. Very proud of myself.
Well done.
I mean, I'm probably just going to be way off. I just like my prediction radar is just like not functioning really for the whole of this season. But this is just a thought I had.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that maybe Callum is gonna volunteer to be the third driver.
Oh shit. Yeah, okay, that actually makes a shit ton of sense,
because we had that scene where he was like overhearing them, and I think he's trying to figure out, like, I think he's kind of thinking, oh, maybe this is my chance to like get Phil. He's maybe not like fully thinking through all the ramifications for Kat, and I think that he might try and like, yeah, get involved. Obviously they've got this like vacancy for a driver.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that in terms of how it'll likely play out. It does, though, make me laugh, like, all this kind of spying that's not particularly, like, covert, that, like, Callum is being able to do in the house. Like, he's literally just standing behind, like, an open door, like, and overhearing them, like, openly discuss a heist, even though they know they live with a cop. So either it's the case that they feel entirely comfortable speaking around him, so why is he hiding? Or, like, I just don't, the whole situation is ludicrous.
No one in EastEnders has ever learned their lesson about eavesdropping. Like, how many people's lives have been unraveled through, like, someone overhearing a conversation that could have easily been had in more covert circumstances?
Well, it also makes me think of the conversation Phil had with Richie earlier in the week, and Kat literally making the point that he could take the phone outside, and then we find out it's a private phone call. So it's like, so you decided to stay in the house where the cat is in there, even though it's a private phone call, but you just won't utilize the kind of mobile aspect of your phone.
Yeah, it is. It's an ongoing theme. There actually was an episode a few weeks ago where I think Callum and Ben were having a conversation about Ellie being a gangster, and Ben was like, just don't tell him, and Callum was like, I have to tell him. And then we had that classic thing where Phil walked in the room, was like, tell him what? And I was like, I wonder if you'd got a montage of every single EastEnders character walking into a room and saying, can't know what, or tell him what, or like every single time that happened, like, how many minutes long would that montage be?
And has that ever happened to you in real life? Because I feel like the way that would happen in real life is, A, you wouldn't hear it, or B, you'd feel too awkward to confront people exactly in that situation. You might have a private word with someone afterwards going like, I heard my name mentioned. Is everything okay? You wouldn't be like, tell me what.
I would stay behind the door to hear all the juicy details.
Yeah, and then leak it to the cops. So Una would not leak it to the cops. I just want to make that clear.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's just, you know, clear up that rumour.
So, now, have I given you enough time to come up with an off-the-cuff prediction?
No, but I'm going to do it. So, here we go. Strap yourself in.
I'm ready.
Looking at my notes, who's going to be the subject of my prediction? I am looking at the word Katie. So, that means my prediction is Frankie does come back on the square, and she does end up coming on to Tina.
Oh yeah, that was such a good prediction, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, when you said that, I was like, wow, I've not thought of that, and that is such a good way for the storyline to go. Great, right. I love it. Your off the cuff predictions are very impressive now, because your one last week was off the cuff.
Was it off the cuff?
It was, yeah.
I don't even remember that. I'm so. Is Tina Frankie's great aunt?
Is she not just her aunt?
No, because Tina is Shirley's sister.
Is how are Tina and Mick related?
Tina's Mick's aunt, isn't he? Now he's Mick's aunt. She's Mick's aunt.
Yeah, okay. But they, like, obviously still relate to each other as brother and sister.
Yeah, of course. But technically, that means that Frankie would be Tina's great niece.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty gross, isn't it?
That is so, like, there's like, you know, incest, and there's, like, you know, sibling incest. I'm not endorsing it, but there is something about cross-generational incest which is just even more, like, sick.
Yeah, but yeah, great for an EastEnders storyline though. Ideal.
Oh my god, yeah. By the way, actually, we always talk about how young Kathy looks. Like, I didn't realize that actually Tina is probably playing, like, the actor who plays Tina is the right age for how old, like, Tina might be, but she just looks incredibly young.
She does look really young, doesn't she? She looks great. I mean, it's partly, like, obviously they dress her up to, like, she's got this character trait of kind of being, coming across as, like, younger than she is, but also just, like, excellent skin.
Oh my god, skincare routine. Need to get on that. To tell us what it is.
So I think that's it for this week.
Oh my god, it's an hour 18 minutes. We're going to do a lot of editing, maybe even edit me saying this out, but yeah, so thanks for listening, and see you next week.
See you next week. Bye
bye.